Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 166 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another media pit with Michael and Zach. Got this one out a little late. I apologize for that. Between travel and all the Pan Am coverage and the cross report and the heat check and my internet not working, those are all the excuses, but there really is no excuse. But between all those things, getting this one out a little later than I wanted, we're going to get the next one out in a couple days. So this one is going to have a short shelf life, and we're already talking about stuff that happened last week, but I think it's still good. It's a good talk, little behind the curtain look at what we saw at Pan Am's. Then we get into the Euro Champs a little bit and take it from there. So let's not waste too much time up front, but do want to tell you about our sponsors for this episode. First one is the Works Hydro Shot. We talked about this one a lot. I just want to keep hitting home on it because it's something that even if your cyclocross season is starting to come to an end, this is a tool that you can use for anything around the house. You always need a power washer, and it's one that is portable. You can take with you. The Works Hydro Shot is the ultimate tool that's practically made for cycling. It's you don't want to put your bike away dirty. That's it. We like playing in the mud, either if it's if you're out there on a wet mountain bike ride, if you're out there on your cyclocross bike for practice or races, or even if you're out in this gunky weather on your road bike and you got some slush on the ground or whatever else, you always want to, and you're getting salt, which a lot of places we're starting to get the salt on the roads, and that can just like destroy your bike, even your commuter bike. This is a great tool to easily wash off all that grime, wash off all that dirt, and make sure that your bikes last longer. Bikes aren't cheap these days. We all know that. And this is going to be something that you can use that is not like, it's not a hassle to set it up. And you can use any water source. You've got a 2-liter soda bottle. You can fill that up, use the bottle adapter, get it on there, hook up the Hydro Shot to that, and your bike is going to be clean in minutes. For our listeners, Works is offering 15% off all Hydro Shots and accessories. They come with a great 20 volt power share battery. So Works makes a lot of different tools. You should check out their whole line of tools. This battery, you're going to be able to interchange it between your Hydro Shot, power washer, and any other tool that they offer. So 15% off all Hydro Shots and accessories. Put together this bike cleaning kit that we want you to check out. If you go to yourcleanbike.com, yourcleanbike, yourcleanbike.com, enter the promo code CLEANBIKE, and you'll get 15% off of any Hydro Shot item. That's a great deal. So please take advantage of that. There's links down in the show notes if you want to just use that. It's much easier. Yourcleanbike.com, clean bike. Thanks again to Works for sponsoring the show and the entire Wide Angle Podium network. We also have another returning sponsor for this show, and that is Shred Science Nutrition. This is something that helped me a ton. Getting to where I wanted to be, to getting me fit. And basically, we're talking about diet. We're talking about food. Diet might be the wrong word to use here, because I think that's a bit of a pejorative. It's really understanding what you're putting into your body and how that affects your performance, how that affects your body composition, how that affects your fat percentage. And if you have goals for where you want to be, Shred Science Nutrition can help. And it's built on macronutrients. So they are going to build a plan for you and tell you how many macros of fat, how many macros of carbohydrates, how many macros of protein you should be putting in your body each day. It's really easy to follow. You're going to find that you're not hungry. You're actually eating more. You're just eating better and filling out the correct buckets that you should, and just adjusting your habits in that way. And if it's losing weight, that's what you want to do. This is something that can help you do. If you want to build muscle, also same deal. If you want to get lean for cycling, these are all things that Shred Science Nutrition is awesome at taking care of. This is not a cookie cutter program. It's not computer generated. They have actual real life coaches that are going to work with you, get you to fill out this huge questionnaire, come back, ask you personalized questions, and then build a plan for that. I can tell you I lost 25 pounds a couple years ago doing this. I'm getting back on it. Little slipped with all the travel this year, getting back on to my macronutrients, and I expect to have the same kind of results. So if this is something that you struggled with or just something performance-wise you want to improve, the best place to do it is with Shred Science Nutrition. Just go to shredsciencenutrition.com. That's it. And then learn all about it. And then hit the contact button and see how they can help you in meeting your fitness and nutrition goals. Finally, Wide Angle Podium. Please go visit. We've got a lot of new content up there. If you don't know, like all the video stuff that we're doing at CX Airs, that's all part of the Wide Angle Podium network as well. So if you're supporting the network, you're supporting us to put out all the Pan Am coverage that Michael and I and Zach are talking about on this show. You know, you're supporting the Slow Ride podcast, who continues, I would say, best road cycling podcast out there, hands down. It's not even a joke. I joke about that show a lot, but the stuff that they do on there, I love it. It's the first thing that I go to when I look at my podcast queue when it comes out. Listen to that right away. Bike Shop CX, those guys just continue to kill it. Consummate Athlete, you know, Molly and Peter also up at Pan Am's over the last weekend. They got a podcast up about that now, and I guarantee you what they're talking about is going to be completely different than what we're talking about. So it's a really, all of these shows complement each other, and that's what we're pretty stoked about. Grodio, we're going to be having a new episode out on that one soon as well. That's a hot area, and we're pretty stoked to have that podcast too. So go check out everything at the Wide Angle Podium. .com, Wide Angle Podium Network. Become a member. It's not too late. We had our donor drive. It's now over, but that doesn't mean that you are prohibited from becoming a member and helping support the network. I said I was only going to talk for a couple minutes, and I just rambled on for 7. Hopefully you're still with me. If you are, I will tell you that we're in the media pit, and we're going there right now. We're here back in the media pit with Michael and Zach. I'm going to start with you, Zach, because just offline before we started recording, Michael was saying it's cold where he is down in Louisiana. So I just want to start with you. Is it cold where you are in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I want to be like official here. So hold on one sec. It is, it's 33, is a balmy 33 in Madison, Wisconsin right now. That is like really warm.
Now, Zach, I'm going to stick with you just for a second, Zach, because I don't want to screw up my throw to Michael. And I don't know if I can ask him about the weather first or if he's got to like get the salutary dad joke in there. We probably should have discussed this before recording, but I'll do it like this. I got this. All right, Michael, how's it going?
Bill, well, I got to tell you, it is cold here, which is 53 degrees, which I got to tell you feels much more magnificent than Midland, Ontario, and I hope that I can carry the excitement of that race into this podcast.
All right. It all worked out.
Can I just do the obligatory slow clap? That was incredible.
Good, good.
That was really good.
Thank you. You know what? We discussed it on Slack, and I came up with it like within 2 minutes, and I was pretty pumped.
That's good. It's good delivery. All right. Well, since you brought up Mags and Carrie, let's start there. We had, well, this was worldwide. All right. So for national championships here in North America, we do our own thing. Like Canadian national championships already happened 2 weeks ago. And then the U.S. National Championships will happen in December, and then all
of Europe.
When are Mexican
Europe... National Championships?
What's that?
When are the Mexican National Championships?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they go the date that you're supposed to be. I mean, there's the UCI mandated date that is in January that we moved away from for now, but I think we may all be back there. And then, of course, Oceania oceanic countries, New Zealand and Australia, they do all theirs in the summer. So they're all done with that. But we everybody has their continental championships on the same day. And that's what we just had this past weekend. Well, at least for the European and the Pan American.
Yeah, to say only two, right?
I don't think, I'm trying to think. I know there's Oceanic mountain bike, but I don't know if the Oceanic has cyclocross yet. And then I don't know if there's an Asian, like Pan Asian.
Hmm. Interesting. I would doubt there is for cyclocross, yeah. But there probably is for mountain biking and road, you know, for the more established disciplines, I guess.
Yeah. So at least for cyclocross, it's just the two, as far as we know. And if you're in New Zealand or Australia, please let us know how we've gone wrong, how we've wronged you, if so. But so we had let's start with the North American, the Pan American Continental Championship took place, Midland, Ontario, this past weekend. Michael, you and I had the opportunity to be up there and do some video work, and I hope all of you were able to check out the product of that work that Michael and I did. We filmed most of the races of the elite races and then have broadcasts up there for the women's and men's elite open races. Also, there's a USA Cycling the Cross Report out there and a heat check all from Midland, Ontario. But yeah, so having been up there for this event, Michael, let's just start with you. Just general impressions. What's your takeaway from the venue, from Midland, Ontario, from Pan Ams? You know, even related to what you've seen at national championships. What's the vibe?
Well, the vibe was, and I'll go back to it, cold. And I made a prediction last week that the snow is going to be a factor in the races, and it actually really wasn't. In so much that it, you know, covered the ground and made the riders have to choose different tires, but it made it wet and it was really slippery. I thought it was a really great course. I liked all the features. I liked the beach, you know, the beach side, the off camber section that I filmed. I thought it set up really well for Pan American Championship, and we made some picks last week, and I think we kind of nailed most of them, but it showed that the two strongest riders in North America won their races and are the two strongest riders. No, I don't know. I don't think there's any other upsets in there.
Well, I think you could argue, and Zach, I'll bring you in on this. I think you could argue, at least on the men's side, that who the strongest rider is still TBD this late in the season.
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah, I mean, I would not make, you pointed this out in the heat check, which I just watched. I had to tune in because I heard that there was a hold steady reference for Ben Frederick and you nailed it. And I was like, yes, huge hold steady fan.
Nice.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think we counted it off head to head, 6-6 or 6 total. I mean, between the two of them, I did the numbers. It was something like they've raced, let me check it out really quick here. Well, it's evenly matched. Like,
yeah,
you know,
not even head to head. Each of them has 6 wins.
Okay.
So you got like Curtis has those two really rads that Kenny wasn't at, Kerry. And I can't even tell them apart now. Kenny is Kerry. But head to head, it's even, you know, flip flopping throughout the season. But each of them was 6 wins on the season, I think was the big thing as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, really the argument, though, is, right, like, you were like, oh, Kerry won day one, and Curtis won day two, and Curtis won day one, and Kerry won day two. So it was just kind of actually hilarious to the extent to which how evenly matched they've been. And, you know, I think the race, as watched on the video, reflected that. But one thing I do want to point out is I think last year, I loved the track last year. I was like, this looks awesome. I want to race this. But one critique of it was that even I think Hyde brought up in the preview I did was that there weren't enough power sections per se. And it seems like maybe the course organizers took that to heart because it seemed like there were a few more like straightaways, put down the power, let's smash kind of situation. So did you get that sense from talking to John Hauser at all?
Not from, I think John, you know, I'm sure that they are very good at taking critiques that riders and anybody gives and implementing them. And that definitely was a change. So the course in parts was almost reversed, but when they came through pit one, so last year I think they went off the start and they went up to the right. This year they looped back around to the left and went down to pit one, and that was just a big, long straight. I mean, almost, I'd say, about a minute of just straight up pedaling until you got to the far right that was sort of this long, lopey section. And then you'd come back down, and then you had the starting stretch, another power section. And then you had the beach section, which the beach, you know, when we saw it last year, it was fluffy and tough. And they actually came through it in the opposite direction and went around. Here it was like you got onto the beach, and it was just like click, 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 and just go. And they were really just putting down the power. And then all the way, anytime it was around the water line, you know, just on that little water line, all the way up until where Michael was positioned up to the really technical section. So, yeah, I would say at least a third of the track was just straight up power.
Well, and I have to say, watching your replay with the drone, it brought back memories of Super Prestige Heaton with this the great tracking shots. Those were incredible.
Like, oh, thanks. Those were
so
fun.
Cool.
Yeah,
that was so cool, man.
It was a pleasure having someone else out there shooting too. That gave us the opportunity to sort of play around with some other things and not feel like we were just missing everything.
Yeah, Bill, that, you know, so we shot that together. You know, I got to say, and just to kind of give people a little background, like, we went up there and we unfortunately didn't get to do the track walk on Friday. I was really looking forward to, I don't know, walking alongside you or shooting B-roll while you're doing the track walk. I always really enjoy those because they're usually at the, you know, the evening and the sun setting. It's really beautiful. And there was a beautiful sunset when we were driving up to Midland and we were like, ah, then the snowstorm came in. Anyway, so I got to say, it was super fun, and I was so into, like, me and you, Bill, like, deciding how are we going to break down that course in terms of covering it and where we could position cameras so that we could have, you know, we could lock down some spots and have things covered that would give us the ability to roam. And I think we did a pretty good job covering the course. And, you know, we sort of came back and we did these edits of the footage, and I passed them off to you. And I didn't realize how much drone footage you shot for the men. And it did really work. It worked out really well. And yeah, like, I want to see more of that. That's such a, it's such a really good tool to give a sort of larger overview. And because it allows you to see some of the riders who are farther back. And that was sort of one of the hard parts for me, was trying to learn, like, okay, if there's a big gap between riders, like, how far back are we going in the order, right? That sort of seemed like a critique you have of live streams, is like, it's just showing Vanderpool. We're not seeing the rest of the race. And then here I am in that position. I was like, oh crap. Like, but I do kind of have to show the front of the race. So yeah, it was really great to put my boots on the ground and, like, learn about how to make that stuff happen. And I'm excited to hopefully do more of those.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you sort of got thrown into it on day one, where we had that women's race where, you know, out front, as again, like, Magalie, and this is not a fault of Magalie, but she makes these races, she sort of decides the outcome early, you know, yeah. And unless something catastrophic happens, it's kind of done. And we had this great battle for fourth place. So you are in that position. And when you are operating the camera, it's very nerve wracking because you're like, oh boy, yeah, I don't want to miss something. Heck, if she falls or something happens and I'm here concentrating on what then will be argued, why are you following not even the front of the race? It doesn't matter back there. You know, so it's a no-win situation, but it is sort of cool to be able to capture those other sort of positions on the race. And as we'll get to talk about the racing, the one thing I think why I sort of did more drone work during the men's race, one, much longer race. So you sort of have the opportunity to do it. It gives you that. And two, much more dynamic race. And there was a lot more to see, where the women's race was pretty much established gaps. You know, we had a race for second and third. That was great. But other than that, established gaps and, not that exciting. Not that exciting of a race. Not to undersell it, but.
Yeah, and I think you did a good job of editing it together. And sort of like I was discussing with my girlfriend, it was like, you know, the men's race had a battle towards the end where Magalie got a gap in the beginning and held it. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, we still want to see that as viewers because, like, we want that coverage. Like, we want to have access to that coverage, even if it's just Magali time trialing, everybody else in their position time trialing, because, one, we want the equal coverage, and there are, you sort of, you do get more of the experience of the race by watching it anyway, and you sort of, you flesh out the entire weekend. So, yeah.
And I was cognizant of that exact thing when I was editing it, and, you know, it was an hour race in 35 minutes for the men's, and it was a 40-plus race in 20 minutes for the women. You know, I mean, you professionally edit stuff, you know how it goes, you're always cutting. I could easily cut that down to 12 to 15 minutes, and I think it would have been okay, but I wanted to make sure that it did have that equal coverage.
Also, because, and just one more point, is just that if we are sort of treating these as like repackaged live streams,
correct.
You know, like a sort of
correct.
So you do want to give that live experience. It's not all just highlights.
Yeah. So you, what do you feel? Give us some consumer feedback, especially on the men's race. Did you feel like you were missing out, even though it wasn't a complete hour, Zach?
Oh, no. I thought it was great. I mean, it was super compelling, watching it, even though I knew the outcome. And I guess when I had watched it, I'd actually talked to Kerry
before
seeing the video. So I'd interviewed him and I'd been like, all right, I'm just looking at time gaps I'm looking at lap times. Tell me the story of this race. And I got like everything wrong because, you know, you couldn't tell, you know, because I was like, oh, you had a 4-second lead in the last lap. He's like, yeah, I couldn't clip in because I had a rock stuck in my pedal. And so they came back to me. You can't tell that by looking at just lap time. So, no, I thought you told the story great. And like, you were, I was seeing all these things that occurred that Kerry had described to me. And
oh, nice. Good.
I guess kudos to him to describing what happened.
Yeah. I think the one disappointment, I sort of like uncover this, that I had in the coverage, and I don't know, I have to do the research on this. So we had cameras on the stairs. We had a camera on the descent that did not fire for the women's race. That was one huge disappointment. So that drop, I did not have any coverage of that during the women's race. And then we had a camera on the run-up. For the women's race, for the cameras that did turn on, we got the whole race, and it was fine. Got every lap in there. For the men's, and I don't know, I got to figure this out for GoPro, maybe somebody knows, but I put fresh batteries in there between races. 58 minutes or 57 minutes, they just turned off. Like, all of them turned off.
So you missed.
So I had the last lap I missed on every camera. So
yeah,
it was a huge bummer because, you know, you got that great quote from Kerry about, you know, sprinting like Usain Bolt. We didn't see it, you know, and that was like a miss for me. And then just seeing both of them come down that descent, you know, would have been great before he makes that turn for home. So that was kind of a bummer. And that's something, I mean, if anything, any self-critique, I would say I got to figure out how to make those. Have those cameras so they're available for the entire race and not miss that final lap.
Well, I was going to say that was the one thing that was missing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's awesome that you shed some light on, admittedly, you know, we're honest about what happened. I think that was super interesting. Cause I was like, he made the move and Kerry wins. And it was
something must have happened. You know? And that was like when we did it at Charm City, that was the cool thing where I actually physically handed off one of the cameras to another person. Like, I was doing it solo then, but I just recruited somebody on the fly. And I was like, you need to, I know you don't really know what you're doing, but you need to just follow them from here. And he did an awesome job. Follow them from the mansion all the way down there. And then I'll be at the finish and I'll pick them up. And it just worked out beautifully. And we didn't miss a second. And I was just hoping that was going to be the same thing for this, but you know, we did miss that little bit. But you know, everybody can go then to Cyclocross Magazine and go read Zach's interview with Kerry and pick up those missing pieces.
Yeah, so I mean, I remember last year, I totally empathize with you, right? Because we had this battle between Curtis and Michael, and so I'm sprinting around the course. I'm like, what if something happens? What if there's a gap? Like, I need a photo of this. And so I'm like sprinting these spots, but I'm like, oh shoot, I have to get back to the finish line. So then I'm sprinting to the finish. I barely get there. And then they have, you know, Curtis or Mike almost puts Curtis into the barriers. And I'm like, my camera. So, dude, it's hard. I get it.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool that you had those shots each lap. And it's, Man, yeah,
and that's the thing is like that is what I think Michael and I both are hoping that other race organizers see the coverage that we're able to do with two people. And yeah. Boy, if we had a third person, you know, yeah. I mean, if we like a little bit more cost, but a third person out there, then it's just like it's all on, and we can cover.
Yeah. I might know a guy. Course. I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah. Should we talk about the races?
Yeah, let's talk about the racing.
Let's start. We talked about the women. Let's start with the women. I mean, we had a clear favorite.
Yes.
You know, at that start line, you guys are kind of there. You know, what was the vibe? What was the sense like? Because I got the impression from talking to the other riders, they're all kind of like, all right, what's Megali going to do? And that's really going to dictate how the start of this race is going to go.
I will say one thing that, you know, it's really so the knock on Magley this year, or maybe any year, has been not as good in sloppy conditions, right? I don't want to take anything away from her racing because she was head and shoulders above anybody else out there. But Michael, I mean, you can attest to this. The women had superior conditions. Like, it was almost hero dirt for them. Everything was tacked up. And they were able to get a lot more traction. Well, I mean, look at the off cambers. The men were running all of the section where you were
That's
at.
True.
She rode, yeah. And then once she rode it, and I talked about this in the coverage. I think that Clara and Becca both saw that, and they were like, "Oh, I guess we can ride this." And they stopped dismounting that first thing where Carrie and Curtis and that whole they couldn't ride it, you know. And I don't, you know, it was just too slippery at that point. So she had a little better riding conditions, but at the same time, just a flawless race. You know, she got, I think on Saturday, she got all of her hiccups out of the sand taken care of. Yeah. She was sort of like bumbling around in there. And I think that was probably her one mistake, her one bobble for the weekend. But after that, it was smooth. And I think that on that starting line, I think she had it won before the whistle even went off. I think everybody was looking around figuring out who was going to be battling for the rest of those podium spots.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen the coverage. She, you know, Ellen gets the jump off the line and Magali on that first turn to the dirt is already scooting past her, and Ellen at the front of the pack is coasting through the mud and Magali is pedaling. And I think that's sort of a big indicator of the riders that day, and Magali just saying, "I'm gonna go hard from the beginning, and I'm gonna stick it." Man, she did. I mean, she's walking away with so much confidence right now. And gosh, if she could just get dual citizenship and race at nationals, like, could be a good battle with the KDs who come back. Anyway,
I will tell you that she was. Where was it? Was it? Oh, it was at Cincinnati. Cincinnati. When she won Cincinnati and Jesse Anthony was there as the USA cyclocross manager, and Magley's walking by. And I said, "Jesse, what you really should do, your best development plan is to get her to be an American citizen." And he was like, "Oh, don't think I haven't thought about it."
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know, she lives half the year in Tucson, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, already there.
But we need her for those C1s, or maybe not. Who knows?
Oh, that's true. That's very true. We need her to be a foreigner.
So one thing I also talked to her, and I think one thing that I'm actually really liking about this podcast is like, to toot our own horn, is like trying to construct or trying to flesh out what some of the narratives are this year, right? And we're able to do it. And I think it's fun because they can just be like, "Hey, we've been talking about this on the podcast," and so it gives me like a little bit of an arm's length to ask about this. So I was like, you know, look, like we've had this narrative, right? Kara kicked your butt at Fayette Cross. She beat you at track. And she's like, "Yeah, I think I'm pretty good. You know, I look at," she finished, her breakout ride was probably Luxembourg Worlds 2017, finished fifth in one of the worst days that I've seen for cyclocross conditions. You know, so she's shown she can ride in bad conditions. She's like, "Look, I had no clue what was going on And she wasn't going to go to Cincy. And she's like, I heard that it was going to be muddy, and I went there for the sole purpose of getting my confidence back.
Oh, that's amazing. And, that's good to hear. Yeah.
And she's like, so she said her and David Gagnon like rode the course a bunch. They spent all this time during pre-ride out on the course. And she's like, I called it getting her groove back, but she's like, I realized I can ride in the mud. And, you know, she crushed it at Canadian Nats. And it was cool that story, that she was very open about admitting that. And she's like, you know, I felt so confident now going into Pan Ams because, you know, I did this race that I wasn't going to do. So I thought that was a really cool story. But at the same time, like, she's really cool to talk to because she's very cognizant of her strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
And doesn't try to hide them from you. She's like, I'm good at this. I'm not good at this. Here's what I need to work on. And so, you know, from my perspective, interviewing, very interesting, because there's no denial from her about what she's good at and what she's not.
Yeah, and what I was saying about it being sort of better conditions for her was not a knock on her ability in those conditions, because she still just rode away from everyone. You know, and even before the race, you know, what I like too is that she is able to test the sections that maybe she's not that as confident on at full gas. I mean, she crashed hard going down the descent before the race even started, you know. Oh. Bent a derailleur hanger, you know. I mean I went back there. It was good, because I talked to David. I was like, I heard you broke a bike in half. He was like, what? He was like, no, it was fine. It was just at a, you know, bend back the derailleur. It was all good. She went down, but I went back there. I was like, oh, Magalie was back here and she ran into a stake and she broke her bike in half, and I don't know if she's gonna race. I was like, really? What the heck happened? And then I see her and she's, you know, absolutely fine. And I talked to David and he's like, oh no, we're fine. It's But yeah, but that also goes to which is great to see. I mean, we see it in the US, we see it in nationals when we got these sort of stars out there that people love to see. So many people invested in Magalie at this race. I mean, it's really neat, especially, you know, just across the spectrum, but the kids out there cheering for her, it was pretty cool. I mean, she's just got this whole little mini contingent of fans who just live and die for her.
Yeah, that was really cool. And on the podium, she wanted to give away, she was giving away bike gifts. She was actually giving away fenders, Ass Saver fenders. I don't know. She's like, I have some swag. I want to throw it to the kids. I'll come up here and I'll throw it out. And she kind of threw some stuff out, and this bigger kid leaned over and grabbed something, and it was Emma White. And I was like, oh, okay. Well.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Emma White was there at Pan Ams. Not in a kit though, not racing, yeah, obviously, but,
Is that a good transition? I asked her, I was like, you sure you don't want to just get in there and just like miss it a little bit? She was like, nope.
She could probably fit on Curtis's bike, right? Borrow a skin suit. Yeah. Maybe Katie Klaus. Yeah.
Also, before we, as we're sitting here recording, I believe we are exactly 1 month away from U.S. Nationals.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think that battle for second and third, I think is certainly worth talking about, because as we look ahead, you know, really a great ride by Rebecca Farringer. I mean, no doubt she knows who one of her top competitors for Nationals is, especially like getting on a podium at Nationals is a huge goal. She gave Clara, I watched, she was there.
She wanted that second place. So it wasn't, you know, she got on the podium, but she wanted to beat Clara. You know, that was really the goal of the race. I mean, the goal of the race was to win, of course, right? But I think that you nailed it, Zach, that she really is looking at Clara. She has the most experience racing against Clara this year, right? That's going to be a favorite for national championships. You got the Katies who will come back for the race, and of course they're going to be a factor. But as far as what we've seen for the front runners, it really is those two that are going to be going after it. And what were you saying, Michael, about just during that one where we missed switching play, where Becca went out front?
Well, that was one. It was one of those situations where there was a fairly good battle for second between Clara and Rebecca, and we missed the final like pass. Like we sort of at various times we saw them in front of each other, and we saw Clara fall the run up, and so we missed the pass. So I don't really know how that eventually shook out, but that was one thing I was bummed.
I will say that Clara did not get lost in the beginning of this one. You know, yeah. And I think if anything, that's kind of the criticism that we've had about her for the season, is that what would happen if she got off to a good start and wasn't sort of hanging out in that top 5 to top 10 to even top 15 during the first lap, but kind of went out front, and could she really just kind of ride away from people from there? And this race, she was out front in the beginning. You know, she really didn't take a while to get up there. She sort of diesels through these races. She's I think Jamie Driscoll's watching Clara Hansinger and taking tips.
Or Clara has watched Jamie's career.
Well, that would have been the obvious way to go with it. I was turning it around.
Okay. All right.
Well, so I noticed that midway through the first lap or so on the video replay, like, there was Clara second, and reminded me of day two at Rochester, where I think actually was a huge ride for her because she was with all the other, everyone was there for the most part, and she was just like, oh, I can be the one who's going to try to chase Magalie Rochette down. Oh, look, I just dropped everyone. So I think that was kind of like, you know, that's what that reminded me of from races,
me
you
too.
Know, that I've seen,
yeah.
That she was the one to at least take up the charge.
Yeah, I think that does happen. It does actually sort of exciting to see from her, at least for the future going forward, that she isn't going to sit there and look around and go, is somebody going to chase her? And she's like, well, I'll do this, and you all can come along if you want, but I'm just not going to give her the win, you know, at least without trying to chase her down a little bit.
I just had to pull up the head-to-head on Clara and Rebecca because we talked about it, and it's pretty lopsided in Clara's favor, 16-6, which I was pretty surprised to see that.
I don't know. I'm not as surprised. I just feel like Clara has been that much stronger. And I think, at least being East Coast, I see Becca more. And then, you know, for Charm City and for DCCX and some of these other races, Clara's not there. So I think that's where she's kind of having that success without having that other competition out there.
It's really close. They're often separated by their neck and neck, which is really interesting, and it's kind of a cool rivalry. I don't even know if they consider themselves rivals in that sense, but you know, she has her inter-team rivalry. But hey, let's have one with a different teammate, different person, not
on
your team,
in the same category,
in the actual same race. So here you heard it here first in the media pit. We are hyping up the Hansinger.
Yeah.
Farringer,
bitter,
cross clash.
Bitter rivalry.
Bitter rivalry. Hashtag cross clash. Yeah. Okay.
East Coast, West Coast.
East Coast, ooh, West Coast. That's nice. So good. Okay. All right. This is good.
All right.
We should probably move over to the men's race, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I heard it was a pretty good race. I don't know. I heard some things happened.
You might have seen it.
Yeah. Like, where do we even start?
Well, I think the passing of the baton from the Hyde Powers rivalry is now complete to the Kerry Werner Curtis White rivalry. I mean, I think this is for real now, and I think that they have seen each other enough that it's becoming something real, where they just want to beat the heck out of each other every time they see them, and they have proven themselves to be a step ahead of anybody else out there, at least 2/3 of the way through the race. And you know, we can talk about the Dangler, who is just putting in just an amazing season, and it's great to see. And that's Jamie Driscoll, who was able to join them near the end of the race. But I love it. I love seeing this two-man rivalry. It makes it that much more exciting. It's the kind of thing that we love in sport, that you don't know who's going to win. I mean, we could have guessed, but I think that, you know, even if you watch Kerry's blog, who he had operating the camera was amazing, because he's asking everybody out there, hey, who's going to win? And like, more than not were saying Curtis, and it was just, it was awesome. Yeah. And that was really
that
cool.
Was, that
there
that
are people
was really, really good content.
Yeah.
Good job in the edit, Carrie, and leave it in. Some people might've been like, oh, we don't want to show that. I was gonna say, interesting that both of them chose not to race on Saturday. So it was funny. I'm thinking back to you saying, you know, Carrie wins on day one, Curtis wins on day two. You know, if Curtis would have raced on Saturday, would that have helped his chances of winning on Sunday? But really what it did was it meant that they were the two strongest people, were the freshest, and they raced that way. But I do want to talk about Jamie Driscoll, because I think that was a really compelling storyline both days, right? That was it also something on Saturday as well?
I think that I was talking to Michael Vandenham. We can double check on this, but according, Michael's pretty good at looking at numbers, because he was talking to, because Jamie after the race was like, so did everybody slow down, or was I actually putting in a good lap? And Vandenham was like, dude, you had the fastest lap of the race on your last lap. He's like, if you would have done that at the beginning, you would have like won going away.
Saturday.
Yeah, for Saturday.
Yeah, so he got third both days.
Yep.
Wow, I mean, kind of a... Do you think this is like a late season resurgence for Driscoll? I mean, have we seen him a ton this year? I feel like he's been pretty quiet.
He hasn't raced as much. I think what this weekend did was it kind of raised the alarms for the rest of that elite field that, oh, crap, we got to worry about Jamie Driscoll at Nationals. Because I think that he's definitely, you know, you're going to get the smart guy pick of, oh, I'm going for the underdog here, Jamie Driscoll. It's like, well, we all know about him. You know, he's not hiding anymore. I think that he has proven that he can ride with them. And look, if you go back and look at the coverage of that race, it was going to be a three-man last lap battle until he decided to stick his front tire into a stake and endo off the front of it and still get up and get back in it. But it was just like that sort of took the wind out of his sails, and those other two got enough of a gap that he was no longer in it. But up until that mistake, he's right up there looking for that jersey.
Is there a rider like in American Cross that people are more afraid of than Jamie Driscoll? Because I don't think there is. I mean, Kerry Werner was like, he's like, oh shit, we saw Jamie Driscoll there. And he's like, in the middle of the race, I was thinking, everyone has a story. He's like, I remember when he destroyed us at Charm Day 2 last year. And
yep.
I was like, oh,
I was thinking about that too.
I remember when he almost beat Hyde at Nationals in Hartford. You know, it's
yes,
just like everyone
right.
has a story about what Jamie Driscoll can do late in a bike race. It's just, I don't know if there's anyone who people are more afraid of to see coming up behind.
Yeah, and
than him.
I think, Michael, you had it. I mean, you had the best comparison about Nationals and past Nationals and the storyline that I think we can compare this to.
Yeah, I mean, I think is this Paige in 2013?
Yeah, for Ooh. Sure, for sure. Guy who's been around forever, comes back, wins the national champions. Could we have a repeat of that storyline? I mean, I think that's a great, great one to bring up. And man, the thing that, you know, we're not talking about here is the guy who was not in the race, who won on Saturday and ended up DNFing on Sunday. And Michael, you caught that sort of coverage, you know, bad mechanical for Steven Hyde and having to walk off the course and not finish it, and just really kind of going along with his whole season. You know, looks like he's coming back, look like he's doing okay, and then just snake bit. Zach, you'll appreciate this. On Saturday, actually, was it Saturday or Friday, just warming up, he actually sprained his other ankle on that same staircase.
Oh, Jesus.
He was like, what the heck is it with that? Like, he came up, and he just, like, rolled it over. He's like, you got to be kidding me. So not, you know, Midland is just not nice to Steven Hyde. But an interesting, I just wanted to touch on Saturday for a second, because that was the race that Hyde won. Gage got second, and we already talked about Jamie Driscoll just coming from literally nowhere and getting third at the front of that race. And we all suspected it. And it was the reason I think that Curtis and Carey both decided not to race it. One, they've done enough C2s that it's not worth it for them for points. And then it's also, it could just be a hard ride. But then also if you crash or something goes wrong, you know, you just want to come into Sunday fresh. Gage is one of the smartest racers out there, and he was kind of thinking along the same lines. And Hyde, I think, wanted to put in some efforts, and that he was, you know, he's a day two guy, you know, and he wants a strong effort on day one going into day two. And he got up there, and Gage is just like hanging out on his wheel. And at one point during the race, he turned to him, he's like, "You gonna go out front?" And Gage just looked at him and smiled, and he was like, "Nope." And I mean, they were both laughing at it after the race, but I'm like, yeah, this is a, you know, Gage Heck, this is a guy who's been like racing on the road for years. He's not dumb. He's just sort of hanging out. He's not gonna overexert himself, and was more than happy just to take second on the day and go out and just crush U23 race. But it was really funny because Hyde was like, "All right, let's get some good hard laps in there," and Gage is like, Go ahead. I'm good here. And so then Hyde actually sat up, and then they were just kind of soft pedaling around for most of the race.
Going back to kind of Michael's, what you were saying about the skipping the first day, you know, I talked to Carey. I was like, "Dude, you won Pan Ams." He's like, "Yeah, it was cool. I was really worried that I made a big mistake not racing on Saturday." That was the first thing that he brought up. So it was just really interesting that it was like, he made this choice, but he didn't know if it was the right choice.
Because that's
that was
been
the first
his MO.
Thing he mentioned. Not, "I won Pan Ams. It's great to have the jersey." He's like, "Oh, shit. What if this didn't work?"
Yeah, because you figure that, you know, you look back at Powers and you look at even Hyde some. It's like racing one day versus racing two. That's never been Carey's MO. He's always like all in for the weekend. So this definitely was a change. But yeah, I mean, it paid off.
So should we skip to that last lap? Like, was just, you guys were there. It was incredible. Is there a story to be told, or was it just, I mean, like, one of the great finishing battles between those two guys was just like everything that
I gotta say is that I was just like, this is like Charm City. It's going to come down like Charm City. I don't want to fuck this up. I don't want to fuck up the camera work. And then I was like, and then like Curtis made a move going up to the off cameras. I'm like, yes, I got it. I got that move. It's so good. It's such good content. And then like, that's one spot I was in. They did the off cameras and they kind of go down and they do that little downhill off camber where Curtis crashed and we couldn't see it. And Bruce Buckley got a great photo, but then they come back up the other rise and then another move happens there. And I was like, yes, bingo, got it. Anyway, just Zach, it was to be there watching it, to be there documenting it was almost exciting as watching it. And so I was happy it played out that way.
Yeah. And the great thing about that last lap was that both of them knew what they had to do and where they had to be ahead. And both of them executed what they needed to execute. You know, it was like nobody made, other than Curtis sort of slipping on that one section behind that tree that we didn't really get to see, but then got up and they were still side by side coming through there. But, you know, we talked about like that section before pit one where it was like really slippery and stuff. And it carries like, I have to be in front of Curtis here or he is just going to destroy me. You know, you're talking about those power sections. When it gets to that power section, I need to be in front of him before we get to that power section. Curtis coming back to those off cameras, like, Carey is riding these technical sections better than me. I have to kill myself to get out in front and be in front during those technical sections. And he does it, you know, he like puts in that effort by the playground and gets in front. So it was, that was the thing that was just great about it. It was like, there was no negative racing and there was no mistake, you know, really by either rider. It was both of them really executing their plans to a T and Carey just doing it that fraction better.
Can we talk about that just briefly, that incident where Curtis is in front of Carey, they go down the off camber and he slips out.
Yeah.
And Carey wants to ride to the right of him around him, but Curtis throws his bike out to the side to make Kerry Warner dismount, so then they're back on equal footing. I don't know. That I was just stoked to see that photo that Bruce Buckley had, and it's just another part of the epic battle.
Which is, I mean, what do you think? I think it's a great move. I think if you're down, he's not throwing his bike. He's holding on to his bike, and he's taking up space. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, right. You can shoulder your bike in a way when you go across barriers where you make it a wider thing than, and yeah, that's, you're shutting doors on people. Those are all things. Yeah. I think you can do that. You know, as long as you don't take your helmet off and throw it at somebody.
Exactly. I mean, I remember that in the, you know, we talked about the European race back when the European Championships was U23, and it's, gosh, I think it was like Wout or Vanderpool and somebody, and Michael Vandernoot, and you know, like Vandernoot had a dismount, and Wout was riding, and Vandernoot just like ran in front of him, like, and sort of pushed him into the tape, and like kept running him into the tape until he had to dismount, you know, because he was at a disadvantage, so he had to do anything he could, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And I think that's honestly kind of the part that I love about cyclocross, that this etiquette of the road doesn't count. You know, somebody crashes and you're like, road, you're like, you wait, and cyclocross, you're like, oh heck yeah, time
hit the gas.
Time to hit the gas and get away from this as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Kerry was, I mean, like, that's cross racing, right? Kerry would have done the same thing. I'm trying to look, he described that when I talked to him. It was something along the lines of Curtis White being that crafty fellow or something that he, I want to say. But another point that's really interesting to me is, you know, I asked them in the preview about the course. I'm like, oh, what do you think about the course? And Curtis specifically was like, oh, I saw they moved the stairs right to the finish. That favors me. And so really interesting that Kerry Warner took the lead right before the stairs. And as he described it, sprinted like Usain Bolt. Up the stairs. So really kind of interesting that there's this turnabout, right? That Curtis was like, oh, if I can just get to these stairs. And credit to Kerry Warner for taking something that maybe he views as a weakness of his, and that we would all view as a weakness, and getting one magical little sprint out of it that kind of secured the win. So I thought that was a really cool aspect of the end of that to me.
Yeah, he even talked in his vlog about this is a good preview for Nationals and how much running he would have to do and how much he'd have to work on it. So it's a great point. And the other thing that I think that he took into the equation is that, and I think he said it when he was talking to you about how just gassed he was after doing that, is that it was a calculated gamble in that once you got to the top of that third staircase, it literally was all downhill to the finish. You know, it was ride on the top ridge, go down the big drop, continue downhill until you make the turn onto the finish. You know, if anything, you would have been at least recovered enough to then sprint for the finish. But it really was a race to that top, and that was the win.
Well, didn't he tell Bruce that it was like, if there were, I went so hard that had there been one more step, I would have completely died. I would have like exploded.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, that's who I can remember. If it was Zach, or it was actually Bruce that he was telling that to. Yeah, for sure.
I think it's come up, right? Like, oh, you know, the Americans, this whole argument, right? Oh, the best riders are in Europe or whatever. I mean, I just saw like an incredible battle between two athletes performing at a high level. I mean, what do you guys? Like, it goes back to your point, Bill. Like, shit, let's sell this product. Like, that was incredible. Like, that they gave everything that they had, that one more step, they couldn't, he would have died.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that this has been, and you know, we've talked about it. I sort of have, it's kind of been the storyline of the season for me, especially covering so closely the domestic scene this year, is that it's been an exciting year. And I think that it's a different product than Europe. It's just a completely different product. And it's one that is not lesser. And I don't know how you can look at what the Housers did putting together that Silver Goose event and Pan Am Championships and say somehow that was an inferior event to European championships. I mean, I think that you could argue the track was more exciting. And I think that, you know, you could argue that the racing was equally as exciting. You know, we'll talk about the men's race for the Euros, and that was definitely an exciting battle too. But again, it came down to the end, but it didn't come down as close as it did in Midland, Ontario. So yeah, that's kind of the argument that I think is out there, that what we have created and what we present to the public for spectating is a different version of cyclocross, and that it can coexist with the European version, and both can be great products, but they don't necessarily have to be compared to each other.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you sort of have to take the strongest riders. You take that moniker sort of in context with its surrounding. And so sure, you might, when you take Carey and Curtis and you put them against the Euros, they're not at the front of the race, but that doesn't mean that when they race against each other, their racing is not as exciting as we've seen. So looking at that as like, we just want to watch really competitive racing, then that's the most important thing. And then, so getting all your competitive racers in North America to race at the same time, not have split weekends, you know, is also a goal. I don't know if that's a good segue to the other race happening or how much we're trying to cover today, but do you guys want to talk about NoHo briefly?
Well, so NoHo had some compelling racing. I mean, you know, it's some strong racers, some good racers, some West Coast interlopers. But man, Sunday looked incredible with both races coming down to the wire. Saturday in the men's race.
Yeah, what was it?
Group of eight in the last lap. So
yeah, I wanted to just make a note that I thought that in the domestic cross scene that we had a really good week of media coverage. Tom over a Dirt Wire, and I watched all his highlights and his micro highlights and his like first lap GoPro cams. A lot of good, compelling stuff that I felt that I got the story of that weekend at it with, you know, our Silver Goose stuff, and it was really great. My main takeaway was that like 6 to 8 people going for the sprint on day one. That must have been rad to watch.
Really.
Yeah, that was the week before, Bill.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, I guess the story, you know, that we've been following, to me, one of the big stories is Mr. McTubbin. 2 wins. He went there with a very specific purpose, which was to win twice. And he achieved that, overcame a mechanical. What do you guys think? The ascendancy of the McTubbin. You know, we talked about it last week. Don't call it a comeback. He finished second and third at really rad. And now he got 2 wins at NoHo against, you know, a number of guys who are some pretty strong dudes. What do you guys think about? Are we seeing the return of the McTubbin?
I think so. I think the one thing that he was lacking in this, in coming back to this, was kind of that top end. And just being able to pull away from people. And in this one, I mean, he's always a crafty racer. And in day one, I guess it came down, you know, Ben Frederick was really animating things on that final lap. And Tobin really knew that he could just sit in and wait. I guess the sprint at NoHo was really short. And there was that right-hand turn onto the sprint. And he just knew, I can just sit here as long as I'm not farther than third back and just put in my last effort right before that turn, and then I can get it. And he did, and he was able to outsprint it. You know, and we saw that when Tobin was on the top of his game, and the storyline in domestic racing was, we need to get rid of Tobin before the end or else he's going to kill us in a sprint. And there was actually a collusion against Tobin that they – outwardly talk about, we need to get rid of Tobin early in the race because we don't want to bring him to the end, you know, between like Hyde and Curtis and Carey, and all they were all working together against Tobin. Nobody wanted Tobin there, and that's a credit to him. That's not a negative against him, and I think we're starting to see that that Tobin again, and he was able to take out the sprint on day one. Day two, I think it was just go time for Ortenblad, and I forget who it was. Somebody went out, Greg Gonzalez
yes.
went out, and Tobin kind of chased him down and was like, all right, I guess if we're going to go, we're going to go, and then he was able to just leave Greg behind and then rolled a tubular. And that's when I think he had about a 30-second gap at that point. That's when Liverman, who had been sort of on it and coming back anyway, was able to catch up. And then they kind of had a nice battle towards the end of that race. But I think that Tobin really was able to control that race the whole time. And I think that he's probably still in that progression. So, you know, we haven't talked about it here, but I mean, I think one of the storylines that we all talk about, especially offline and on our Slack channel and everything else, is the decision making between these two races. What are you going to do? Are you going to go to Pan Ams, or are you going to, you know, go to this other UCI race? And there's arguments for either one. You know, I mean, one of the arguments was, you know, that Adam Meyerson put out there. He's like, well, if you're not going to win, why are you going to that race? Why don't you just come to Massachusetts and race my race? And I understand, as a race organizer, that's a good line to put out there. The other side of the coin is lots of points on hand in a continental championship race. I mean, you can be much farther down the line and get more points than you can at a C2 that's only giving away points for the top 10. And just to finish my point with Tobin, I think for him, that doesn't mean as much as sort of, you know, you talked about Mags getting her groove back. I think the same thing can be said for Tobin, where he's in a field that he's like, okay, I know I can control these races and I can just put in two great efforts, and that's going to give me the confidence and kind of sort of retrack me on how to win races as we go into the later part of the season.
I mean, so it sounds like either you talked to Tobin or you read Taylor Jones of, I believe, your CX Harris crew did some great interviews for Cyclocross Magazine with Tobin, with Travis, the last couple of weeks, actually. So, you know, did a really good job kind of getting the inside story of kind of what's going through Tobin's mind. And Tobin, to his credit, has always been really open about what he's going through. I mean, I was messaging with him and I was just like, hey, man, like, I really appreciate it that you're willing to kind of open up about these struggles that you're having, right? Like, we have a short memory. We have this really short memory in cyclocross. Like, he was the man in 2017. He was incredible. Like you described, Bill, like, everybody was like, holy shit, what do we do about Tobin? You know, he was winning races. He won how many races that year? You know, so we have this, like, I guess, short memory sometimes. And it's like, you know, it's like, what have you done for me lately? But it's, to come off that high, you know, to be back and to have him be open, I really appreciate it. I think it's really says a lot about his character, even as a young dude, you know, struggling.
Yeah, which is, you know, we talked about Driscoll earlier as somebody who I think you really have to keep an eye on coming up in the Nationals. You have to be excited that Tobin is sort of regaining that form as well, and he's going to be another guy up there. I mean, I'd love to see this, you know, group of guys up at the front at Nationals and not having any idea who's going to win. I mean, it's going to be amazing. It's in same thing with Hyde. I mean, we can never count him out. You know, we know that, you know, I mean, I know Zach, you talked to him about last year. The guy basically probably took years off of his life just winning that Nationals last year because he was not going to lose it. So, you know, we always know that he can sort of do that as well. So it was cool to see Tobin back. And then, yeah, on the women's side, just Carolyn Nolan, same kind of story, you know, not going to Pan Ams, going to NoHo, and just really putting her season together kind of later in the season, sort of working towards Nationals as well.
That's what I was going to say, is it sort of the Nolan storyline, it kind of makes sense. It's the ascendancy of her career, or however you want to say it, but her season, and that she has been putting those, doing consistently, getting better results, committing to the whole season. You know, she's been on, and she's from California, and she's been racing all over the East Coast.
Or Nevada.
She's from Nevada.
Is she Reno? Yeah.
You know what? My bad. I actually read that CX Magazine interview.
You just had to read the title. You just had to read. I think you just had to read the title. You didn't even have to read it. You just had to read the title.
Zach, when I see CX Magazine, I just click on it right away. I don't know. I don't read the title. I just click on it to give you the click, and then I maybe read it later on.
Okay. I appreciate it. What a nice guy.
Well, she writes Rock Lobster, so I associate her with California. Anyway,
that's fair. That is fair.
To put in the time and to smartly, I think, race at NoHo, just like Tobin, and get some UCI wins, like Honor Palmares. Like, that's great.
Another cool thing about her as a writer, like, she's a hell of a writer, too. She's been writing some diaries for us, and, I mean, really, it's like some of the best rider diaries I've ever read. Like, she's kind of poetic. Like, I think being poetic as a writer is something that I certainly don't do, and, like, she has a way of doing it that's really impressive, but one thing that's really cool about this trip, so she raced at Really Rad, and she raced at the Verge Northampton International. She is originally from NorCal, so she's from kind of the Bay Area, and she's actually donating all of her winnings to last year was the Campfire, whichever, the victims of the fire in Sonoma County that's going on. So she wrote a diary about that, and so that was really cool. It was really touching. I mean, if you get a chance to check out what she's written, like, I love editing them because I don't have to edit them. I just get to read them and appreciate how good they are. But I thought that was really cool. So, you know, part of her motivation was winning money and donating it to victims of those fires. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I did not read those and need to go back and do that, because that's a really cool story. I dig that.
They're pretty good. They're like legitimate. And you know how rider diaries can go sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like here's what happened. Like, she just gets a topic and she totally dives into it, and it's really, they're good.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about Europe at all? We're already at an hour. I mean, we could, I think, let's give ourselves about 15 minutes maybe to plow through.
Okay.
I do really want to talk about Euro Champs.
Well,
we were talking about it in the green room, and I was like, Zach, zip it. Like,
oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So, Michael, Euro Champs, they were in Italy near Venice. They were not completely underwater like the city of Venice has been this past week. What did you think of the course? What did you think of?
Hey, can I ask a question first? Because
sure.
You were talking about water.
Yeah.
So which leg of this triathlon was the water? Because I noticed the numbers on the helmets, and I just assumed that this was a triathlon and not a cyclocross race.
Bill, hang on. No, you got it wrong.
Okay.
This is they're in Italy. It's a Gran Fondo.
Oh, okay.
This is a short track Gran Fondo. I think that really they're on the bleeding edge here of trying to recruit the metric century crowd into cyclocross. But I'm like, look, you're going to put your number on your helmet. Like,
and then you can keep it there all year long
and
prove to your friends you've done competition.
Exactly. Yeah.
But like, what I don't this is going to derail this, but like, what I don't understand is only some riders had to wear the helmet numbers.
Vanderpoel got some sort of exemption.
Didn't have to wear it. Yeah,
he had his on his shoulders.
But like, then Ellen Van Looy had the number on her helmet. Like, we had this picture.
Well,
of her,
and I don't think they really specify. So you had some people with like the back number, like the huge number on the front, and then you had like, I think it was even a. Oh, God, it was like Vanternout or Pidcock, who had like the shoulder numbers on the sides of the helmet, like one on each side. And somebody had like the cut one right on the front. It was like no diagram, no nothing, just like take off the sticky part and slap it on there somewhere.
It was an amazing sight to behold. And I just assumed that like if you're the world champion or you had Red Bull money, you didn't have to wear the number.
Yeah, I really think that they were like, whatever the thousand of Swiss francs that this is going to be, I think my sponsors have this covered.
Yeah.
I'm not putting
exactly.
a sticker on my helmet.
Well, we talk about the comment section on the GCN live stream. It sounded like the theory, the overriding theory was that it was for TV purposes. And so I think this segues into you, Michael, in terms of what you, the course, what was going on, the broadcast. Man, Like, there's a lot going on here.
There was a lot going on at Eurochamps, like, on so many levels, and the fact that Weekends talks so long about helmet numbers. I thought, okay, so on the good was that there were a lot of fans there. There's a lot of people, and they were running around, and they seemed to be pretty pumped about Cross. And it's like, great, okay, if we're going to have to expand World Cups next year, I hope there's going to be one in Italy, because there seems to be a love there and a support for it.
Well, there have been in the past. This is not the first time they've been there. There have been.
Not Fuji. Oh, my God.
What's that?
Like,
oh, Fuji, yeah. But even before that, like, there was the one at the horse track that was awful.
See, I feel like I remember the one that wasn't any good. So I guess that.
Yeah,
so
the and then there was the Fuji one, which was just a death trap. And
well, Fuji's where Tone Arts broke his collarbone. That was the ice race.
Right. Well, that was
still talk about how horrible that race was.
They had all they had the ice race, and then they had this like really just sketchy descent. That they had a camera on one side, and then they laid the cables across the track on this big descent, muddy descent with like a right turn at the end. And then they decided, well, that seems too sketchy, so we'll put some carpet remnants on top of the cables because that seems like the dangerous part. And then people were just like catching that carpet and basically doing muddy magic carpet rides down there. And it was just, oh, it was just the biggest freaking mess I've ever seen in a cyclocross race. But that's, but now I'm derailing it.
Yeah.
Back to you, Michael. Back to you, Michael.
No, I mean, I love it. So you had all these fans. It was great. You could feel the energy. It's exciting. But because the way the cameras were laid out and because the way the course is laid out, you couldn't see half the course because you were looking at the fans' butts. Like, you could see these little helmet numbers bobbing along, and then all of a sudden, they'd come around a corner, and you'd be like, oh, Eli's attacked. So also another thing about the course was that it was super narrow. The course looked like it was designed by some, like, a local level first time cross course like designer where everything is like so narrow. But that really actually sort of played into the development of the race because there was not a lot of area to pass and there wasn't a lot of power sections, which we know our boy Vanderpool likes to put down the power. And so it actually turned out to be a really exciting race, so much so that Bill, I think we were up on Sunday morning editing, and all of our like social media feeds are like, oh my God, men's race, so good. Men's race. Like everywhere I turned, It was like the men's race was
Vanderpool's
so good.
Vanderpool's actually got competition.
Yeah. So I think that sort of the oddness of this course actually was a strength in the end for the fans, except for the part where you couldn't see anything.
Yeah, it is one of my, well, first off, that fencing that they were using, it almost looked like everything was squared off. Like there were no like gradual turns, like you were saying. Everything's really tight. And I, as far as like what I like to see in course design is that when you have turns and you have corners, you want to set them up so that if not everybody turns at some people corner better than other people, right? I mean, that is a skill that people have, and that's something where you can be better, that can be an advantage for you in a race. But if you have a race that you put a speed limit on every corner, then it takes away that advantage and it takes away that skill. And I think that, you know, other than the power sections, that is a skill that Matthew Vanderpool has. When he comes to corners, he's just, if he can rail them and not lose any speed where other people just have to like hit a little break and take a little off of it, and that's where they're losing for him. For this, everybody, there was a speed limit on all of these turns. So everybody had to be on the brakes, go through it at the same speed, and that kept everything together. So yeah, I mean, if they were that crafty to say, hey, we want to give our Italian hopefuls a chance here to actually be in this race, then kudos to them. But as far as like, you know, showing the skills of riders, I don't know if that's necessarily the course design that I would go with. And then it did look very American for like beginner, you know, first couple years of a race, how we thought races should be set up with 100 turns. And then the thing with the planks, where you have to have planks like after a 180 or planked on a turn or whatever. And I'll just stop with this because I know we're going to talk about the planks. Very American planks. These were not Euro planks at all. These were like, we are going to go to 39.9 centimeters and maybe a little bit just to get to that limit. They're going to be high as possibly we can at the limit.
I got to say, one of the coolest things was, I don't know what lap, it was early in the race where Eli was in front and he jumped over the planks. And in between running between planks, he looks back to see where the other, where Vanderpool is. I've never seen a look back in between barriers.
Here's another cool thing. I don't know if you noticed this. Did you see Tom Pidcock going over the planks?
No.
They were so high. You have to go back and look at this. They were so high. He was stepping on top of them.
Smart.
He was not going over them. He was actually stepping on top of each and sort of catapulting off of them.
Oh, wow. So I will. So whatever. We're all on topic. So on my race on Sunday, there was a similar situation where they put the barrier at the apex of a right-hand turn. It was a 180. And so it was funny because my dad was like, this would have been helpful to dismount on the right side. I was like, dude, like only Lawrence Sweck does the dirty side dismount. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, dude, you do not know how hard it is to learn how to dismount on the right side after you do it on the left. So I just thought it was really funny. And I was like, never mind. I wasn't going to try to explain dirty side dismounting to him.
I like that your dad's there and he's giving you racing tips. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we had a course like that a few weeks ago, and he's looking at it. He's like, there was just the power, the start finish straight. He's like, there should be more power sections on this course. You need those like straightaways where you can pedal your bike. And I was like, I know. Because like we had a similar course where there was like no time gaps. Like everyone was within everyone was within 5 seconds of one another because like you couldn't put down power. You know, it was just corner, corner, corner. And so it just reminded me of this race and Michael kind of and Bill, how you guys have described it. Like there was no skill behind it. It was just like speed control.
So I got to say, one of the things that was really cool to see, especially visually, was the 5-6 blue Belgian shirts ganging up on the one white world champion shirt. Side note, Vanderpool didn't wear the Dutch colors. He wore the world championship jersey. But we got a really good race, and we had some tactics, and it came down to the end. And, you know, maybe that was because of the course and the limiting factors, but that made it much more enjoyable. And as I don't know, there's something to it. Maybe, like, can you design a course that's, like, anti-Vanderpool? Like, they had to tiger-proof courses in golf, right? Like, it made them so much more longer, and... is there a way to design courses that neutralize Vanderpool's efforts? Although he seems so good at everything.
Oh, believe me, it happens all of the time. I mean, there was I remember Sven's last year where all of the Medipegan riders and team were all pissed off because the organizer, you know, basically made the course for something that Sven could win. You know, it worked all to his strengths. I remember you can go back to Tabor Worlds where Stibar was supposed to race, and they tailor-made a track for Stibar to win on, and then he hurt himself and didn't even race. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that definitely – I don't know if they did, but that has historically played into it where you look at – you're hosting this, you're looking at your riders, and you are going to set something up that's going to benefit them and hopefully hurt the best. So if that was the plan, then kudos to those race organizers because they played it out perfectly. Maybe what they were trying to do, really, and we haven't even talked about the women, was set something up where Eva Lechner or Arzufi really could excel in that race because those are their stars for cyclocross.
Let's talk about the women. Yara Castellan sort of has been the rising star of the season for us. We've been talking about her a lot, and she got the win. She went away pretty early and was able to hold it, but Eva Leckner was charging and actually made the race fairly exciting. I mean, you saw Yara looked over her shoulder a lot in those last two laps. Really could feel Eva coming on. I'm sure the crowd helped her, let her know. Even J-Pow was pointing out how you can hear where someone is by how the crowd cheering goes behind you. But yeah, just talk about sort of, you know, we talked about Kerry Warner winning a big title, winning Pan Am's, his first title. Yara Kostelin winning Euro Champs, kind of, you know, she's won some races, but that really puts her mark, you know, on the season and saying like, hey, I'm here and I'm something to, I'm a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I think the story is Eva Leckner left off the team last year. The Italian Federation didn't even let her go race Euro Champs last year. So do you think she was a little bit motivated this year? I would say, I'm guessing that she was pretty motivated, right? That was part of the story last year. Like she wasn't on the team.
Yeah, for sure. I think she's, you know, whatever reason, her and the Federation don't always see eye to eye, but I think that ever since she kind of scaled back almost to no mountain bike racing and really was like, I'm a cyclocross racer in these last 2 years. And we saw it last season with her moving to that Belgian team. It was kind of the resurgence of Leckner going from somebody who was kind of mid-pack, top 20, to somebody who was like fighting for podiums throughout the year. So I think it was they really couldn't ignore her this year.
Well, and she had the results last year too. That's what was kind of shocking about it is like her results are, you know, I mean, she wasn't like, you know, it's like Xavier Nemers or, you know, right? Every time it's a mountain bikester course, according to the Belgian broadcasters, you know, her name gets mentioned. But yeah, it was kind of shocking. I think it was kind of like one of those WTF kind of moments. She certainly deserved to be on that team. And so, yeah, I just kind of wonder, home crowd, you know, some motivation to prove like, hey, you guys really screwed up last year. And so she certainly delivered. You know, and looking at Yara Castellan, it's like kind of curious to see, right? I look back at 2017, Maud Kapthans totally crushed it in October. She was beating the crap out of Sana Kant. And we were like, oh, man, you know, here's this young rider. She's on the ascendancy. And it lasted for like 2 months. And then she just kind of slowly fell off. And now it's like, oh, Maud's there. But, you know, she hasn't achieved anywhere near where she was like, right. I mean, she was like beating Sana Kant at like Zonhoven, yeah, and maybe Kokcida, like just incredible results, you know, at these races, and then just kind of tailed off. So I'm kind of, she's young. She just graduated from the U23. So I'll be curious to see, you know, how it continues. But, you know, Havre, Kopenberg, those are two of the classics. I mean, those are the two of the top non-World Cup races to win, like, and Euros, like, for sure. Pretty impressive.
We'll all be World Cups next year. Michael, give us a rundown on the Sane watch.
Sane watch is trending downward. Sixth place. I'm a little worried, actually. We're in the middle of November here, and I would have hoped it would have been pointing upwards, so maybe sell now if you can.
What did she look like, though? What vibe were we getting? What Sane vibe were we getting?
Tired.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. I think one thing I would like to end on, just to put a pin on the Pan American and the European Championships. A lot of comments out there about really a lot of questions, because there was a stark difference between what kits people were wearing in the European Championship versus the Pan American Championship. And what this comes down to is that the federations, the regional federations, the continental federations are all have a little bit of leeway in how they run things. So this starts even from what kit you have to wear. So the Europeans have mandated a rule that the Euro Champs kit actually takes precedence over the national kit. So if you're a national champion and you're a European champion in Europe, you have to wear the European Championship kit. You can't wear your nationals kit. No exception. If you are in North America and you win the Pan American Championship, our federation, our Continental Federation, has not made that a requirement. They talk about voting on it. I think down the line we are going to see that change being made, but right now it is rider's choice. So that's what we see with Mag Lee mostly, where she'll show up, muddy race, she's going to wear her red, you know, Canadian championship kit. Sunny Ray, she's going to wear the Pan Am's kit, and it's up to her, and there's no fine, there's no repercussion for that. Our Continental Federation allows riders to do that. So that's one difference between just kit preference. And then the second big one, and along those same lines, is how the championship is run. We do not have a requirement in North America that you, I shouldn't just say North America, the Americas, that you have to wear a federation kit. You can still wear your team kit or whatever kit you want during the race. So that's why everybody was wearing their trade kit. It doesn't mean that the race is any less or people take it not as seriously or whatever. That's just the rule of the federations. Different in Europe. Europe has decided we're running it like Worlds. Everybody's going to wear their federation kit. That's how we're running this championship. And that's why they do it that way. So it really isn't, you know, what I was seeing was like, oh, the Europeans take it more seriously. That's why they're all in federation kits. It really has nothing to do with that. It's just how the rules have come down. Possibly in the coming years, if our federations all get together and decide, hey, we want everybody to wear federation kits too, that may happen, and we may see it as well. And then just the last point along there, just I know a lot of people know this and it's been talked about, but the European Championships, especially on the men's side, it was not an elite race. It's only been an elite race since 2015. So this is year four for elite races. Up until then, it was a huge U23 race, and we'd see these great battles, but it was kind of a weekend off for the men. It was a big race for the women. So it's still growing. And I think, Zach, you made the point that since it's become an elite race for the men, that has kind of raised all boats. And now the European Championship, where it used to be this forgotten race across the board, now it's a big deal. And everybody's sort of shooting for that jersey.
My point was actually we had a temporary green room break in the middle of the podcast was actually about how quick I'm impressed. Because I remember when Pan Am started, people were talking about it, and I was like, I mean, I had just started, but I'm like, what the hell is a Pan Am Champs, and why do people care? I'm just impressed with how quickly that jersey has taken on meaning here in North America. Like, it means a lot. Like, you know, for Curtis and Megaly to win it last year, just seeing them, talking to them, and how much it meant to wear that jersey means so much to them.
Oh, just how dejected Curtis was at the end. I mean, that was a huge goal for them that he didn't reach, and you could kind of see that as he came across the finish line.
Yeah, and you see it in the intensity of the racing. I mean, I said this last year. Michael, you probably had this experience, but, like, you should go to Pan Am's at some point and just see how freaking hard these people race.
Look at somebody like Ruby West. I mean, one, she wanted it, but also this was redemption for her. You know, she had that mechanical in Nationals and didn't win the national championship and was able to really redeem that this week and get an equal, you know, level, if not more so, jersey by getting that Pan Am jersey. So yeah, all right. Well, I think we did it. Michael, where can people get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at Yeah You Ride on the Instagram, and you can find me on the Twitter sphere at Land Softly.
Awesome. And Zach, what you got going on, and where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at the Shoe Star. If you like cyclocross coverage, cxmagazine.com. We've been doing pretty well lately, putting up a bunch of stuff. I think between you guys on the ground, I definitely was jealous that you guys were able to go, and you guys did an incredible job. It was very, you know,
thanks.
The fellow media pit members, it's just like, we're in good hands. Like, you guys are super professional. And Michael, I was so stoked to hear when Bill was like, yeah, Michael's coming. I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
It was.
And you guys, awesome. You guys did a great job. So
thank you.
Yeah, no, I think all around, like you were saying, I think it was a strong week of media coverage, and it shows what the cyclocross community can do as a team. You know, Vittoria does a great job. Lauren LeClaire holds down the fort running media for that series. You know, and Tom Parsons chipped in his video skills. You guys, Cyclocross Magazine, that was pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
It was a good week.
The extended media pit. So here's actually, I don't want to open up a whole nother can of worms here since we were signing off, but I do want to ask this, Zach, since you've been talking about your racing and getting back into racing. One, has Wisconsin State Championships already happened?
Next weekend.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Are you geared up? What are we looking at? We're going to be on the podium?
Dude, so Zach Schuster is owning the podium scrub zone in Cat 3 in both Wisconsin and Chicago. Six finishes, fourth, fifth, or sixth. I feel kind of like Courtney McFadden. I finished fourth three times this year, including over the weekend. So I empathize
Schuster
with Courtney.
Schuster is the dangler. He's the Wisconsin dangler.
Oh, man. Dangler. Like a cheese curd.
Trust me, I look at how Jamie races and I see, like, I don't have, like, that super high end, you know, because, like, the way these races work is people just hammer at the beginning and the really good riders stay away. You know, I'm more like, all right, can I just withstand this onslaught and then kind of work my way up? So, yeah, I watched Jamie White race and I'm like, oh, yeah, I empathize with that. So,
all right. Next question for you, final one.
Yeah.
You racing at Nationals?
I'm not.
Oh, no. Come on. I think it'd be a good story. You know what you could do?
Yeah.
You could start a vlog.
Okay.
And then you might podium at Nationals.
Dude, the 35 to 39 has some hitters, man. Like,
oh, for
that
sure.
is a tough category. We've got some friends.
Plus has hitters. I can't race.
Single speed?
No
None.
Way. Jay,
None.
Dude, single speed's like full already. Yeah. Like, you ain't getting in that one. That one's like pretty much filled up.
Relay race? Donut race?
Yeah, we'll see.
Non-championship podium? The non-championship race that they do a podium for?
Well, I'll call Brenna from Team S&M from Selwood to see if they've got a Kona sitting around.
Oh, yes.
Maybe they could drive up, be like, oh, Brenna, you know, can you just happen to throw one in the back of your car? Like, we'll see what happens. So,
we should make this happen. Awesome.
Cool.
All right. You can check out everything I got going at CX Airs on most social media. Also, follow the Cross Report over at USA Cycling's YouTube channel and then CX Heat Check and other cyclocross related videos at youtube.com/CXHairs. Zach, Michael, it's been awesome. We're going to do it earlier next week. I now have internet and not like 18 different projects to get to. So we'll catch up after the weekend of racing.
Sounds good. It's been a blast.
Yeah.